Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Block Hash Podcast, episode 381. Today, we have the founder of the Conflux Network and an assistant professor at the University of Toronto, Fan Long, here to talk about the network itself, as well as some interesting updates around a blockchain SIM card, a stablecoin being released relatively soon, and what's happening within their ecosystem. So, Fan, welcome to the podcast. Super happy to have you on the show today, and it's going to be a fun and exciting conversation. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be here.
Happy to have you as well. Before we jump into it and start talking about Conflux and some of the things you guys have going on, tell us a bit more about your background and your personal story. How did you wind up with Conflux, creating it, founding it, as well as, you know, in Web3, I guess, generally?
Well, my background is always being like hacker and also scientist. And I think, back to the like high school days, I was like one of those competitive programmers, and which I just love writing code. And in high school, I actually went to the Olympia for informatics, IOI, those kind of like a competitive programming contest internationally for high school students, and won gold medals. And then later in the undergrad and graduate school, I become a computer scientist. I did my PhD at MIT, and my research was always about I would say that it's a, at that time, there is no blockchain as a research field. So I was always, it's all about system security, block programming languages, distributed systems, et cetera. So those are areas that are, you know, very related to blockchain, I would say. So that's why actually when blockchain is a thing, I immediately get interested in it. And the funny thing is I actually know Bitcoin and around 2011. That's
very early.
Probably very early, and actually bought 100 Bitcoin very early, when the Bitcoin was $10, and sold them at $50. And that's the kind of the most funny thing that I had. And I'm still regretting it today.
I bet you wish you had it back now.
Exactly. So I know that very early, and it gets immediately very interesting. And around the time I graduated, from MIT at 2017, it is a time where the whole community, blockchain community, has been talking about how to increase the scalability, improve the scalability of the system, how to make blockchains run faster, processing more transactions per second. I think at that time, that's the biggest topic everyone's talking about. And then we just felt as a researcher, we felt, this is something, some very interesting research idea. So, because at that time, I already know that I'm going to go to academia. I will start my appointment at University of Toronto as assistant professor, tenure track assistant professor at 2018. So I'm just doing my gap year. So I graduated doing my gap year. And I think, okay, well, let's just look at this problem as a research problem. So I talked with a bunch of collaborators, actually, because I'm actually during the gap year back to China and just stay with my friend. And there are a bunch of really talented Tsinghua University researchers that we are doing this kind of topic together. And we designed this, I think at that time, very novel DAG-based consensus, which can achieve thousands of transactions per second without sacrificing any decentralization. So that forms the basis of what the current Conflux consensus run today. And we put an archive paper. At that time, it's just a we are still a bunch of researchers, right? We would say, okay, let's publish a paper. That's like, yeah. So then we have that archive, and we start to get contacted by VCs. And I think, then I get to know that at that time, that's actually one of the kind of height of the, I think it's already lost and lost, right? Last cycle was like a pandemic. The cycle before, the ICO cycle, that was kind of a peak of the ICO cycle. So there are a lot of interest out in DC trying to persuade us, okay, well, just don't make it a, seeding as just a research paper. Right there, let's, turn this into a real product and then blah, blah, blah. And, we get persuaded and, we actually don't know what we are actually heading into, at that time. Mm-hmm. So we say, okay, well, let's just do this. So so we published the paper at early 2018. So around the middle of 2018, we start fundraising. Well, most likely we already have our pillow, like the lead, that time to support China. So they lead that round, and then we're just trying to fundraise from different VCs, and then so we started the Conflux and like end of 20 I think it's roughly the fall of 2018 we finished the fundraising and then wrapping up everything. So that's the official start of the Conflux network. And so that's kind of a little bit of background of how I come from like hacker researchers and then to do the Conflux network.
What communities would you say are the most involved in the Conflux network? Is this something that's just global and everyone participates and you see participation all over the world, or do you see a large influence in Asia or in the US or in other parts of the world? Who's contributing to the network?
Well, first of all, we are a permissionless blockchain. So everyone around the world should be able to, join and, play and with it. So that's a bottom line. But we do have more presence and focuses in Asia, and particularly Hong Kong. And we also being well known in China and have presence in China. So we are, so two things that are quite special about the Conflux networks. So one is we are actually funded by, a group of top computer scientists in China. We are very tech heavy. And another important aspect of Conflux is we are, right now today, we are the only regulatory compliant public chain in China.
Very nice.
Well, people used to keep asking, what does that mean? Okay, well, right now it's quite obvious. So we have employees, we have offices in China. So, and in Shanghai, and it's not like, many other, like maybe the Chinese root team, either they are no longer active after the crackdown, the severe crackdown at 2021, or they are actually just leaving completely, right? So either they remain silent and you know, just no longer just like work from home distributed, or they're just
right,
you know, not leaving completely, and then have all the employees either they leave or they go to another jurisdiction. So we are the only one that have been very active and stays China. So that's kind of the geographics, and that is also why I think well, we are a blockchain that have been exist for well, so our mainnet actually launched at 2020, so that's the October 2020. So we but it's around, I think recently, around last year, like when the Hong Kong policy gets held, so we get to the spotlight again, in a sense that people realize if Hong Kong being more opening up or like towards embracing the Web3, then it will naturally bring more adoptions to Confluence Network, and the community are getting excited about that.
And what kind of things are you seeing developed within your guys' ecosystem? I know you guys have some updates on some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. So, well, we can focus on the highlight you mentioned. We can focus on the highlight later. So let's just first have a big picture.
Sure.
So we have, right now have two, you can think of two subsystems or two subspace, we call it. So we have a fully compatible to EVM subspace. We call it the EVM space. And we also have, we call it a Conflux space or core space. So EVM space is fully compatible. Then you can use, you know, just a MetaMask to connect to it. And it has been the home of the major like DeFi activities and globally accessed. So there are DeFi activities there. We have a Swap, we have lending protocols, we have different exchanges and even NFT market there. So that is the DeFi activities, the DeFi region. Or we call it like EVM compatible place. Mm-hmm. So we also have this core space. So the reason we have this core space is because since the regulation in China changed, they basically, they still say that they support blockchain technology, but they really don't like cryptocurrency. So essentially, they are putting a requirement like if you want to provide blockchain service, you have to make sure that, you know, end user don't touch cryptocurrencies. So that's a kind of a requirement. That's why in core space, we basically developed this mechanism which allow the smart contract deployers to pay transaction fees on behalf of users to a certain limit. So this basically allows the users to be able to, you know, not only any cryptocurrencies, and still they can use this interactive smart contract, and that will be enable the regulatory compliance in China or in the mainland. And well, they are actually very active, I would say, NFT issuing need in China. So we are actually the leader in that domain in China. So, well, it's like a very foreign thing for a lot of your audience. I mean, when you think about NFT, you're thinking like, okay, well, this is monkey, and this monkey was a floor price was 1.5 Ethers. I mean, well, in China, the NFT, because of the, you know, heavy regulation presence, the NFT was more. So it's like against the idea of you have like an NFT and it's a crazy speculation and it goes to a very high amount. So NFT is often used as a marketing tool or ask someone. So there are, for example, it's like, okay, you buy bubble tea brand, and there's a, you know, chain of bubble tea brand. Maybe one in the 20 chance whenever you buy a bubble tea, you'll be awarded a bubble tea issued collectible NFT. And you know, it's used like that. So that means in China, actually, there are a lot of issuing amount, and each amount tends towards less. It's not like on average, well, the people are saying, okay, spending like one ETH, two ETH on an NFT. So usually it's like, okay, the average worth of NFT was like $20 or things like that. But, you know, there are also, of course, there are all more rare kind that could go to, you know, several hundred or thousand dollars. But usually it's around that level. And when it's going even higher, it may trigger some regulation alarm. They don't want the crazy speculation. But yeah, so that is actually a very active market. And we are the leaders of that market, actually. Because we are the only, NFT is legal in China, right? So just should be clear, right? NFT is legal, but cryptocurrency is not. Non-fungible token is fine. At least that's what the regulation appears. And you just need to find a way to, you know, you can serve as the infrastructure. So we are one of the main infrastructures to issuing NFT. We on our platform, we have been issued over 9 million NFTs, different kinds of NFTs on the core space. And it's one of the main platforms. I think we are either the top one in terms of number of issuance or the second place, but all the players are actually not public chains. They are just consortium chains or private chains rather than the public chains. So we are the only public chains, and we have been one of the main issuers. So that's another, I think, ecosystems, you know, so that's the current status and the big idea. And yeah, so that is, I think, what I would want to say for it.
Do you want to get into some of the bigger updates that you guys have coming out? I know one of them in particular is really interesting because you guys are working on a blockchain SIM card.
Yeah. So there are actually several exciting updates we have. Yeah, so I mentioned, so blockchain SIM card has been, I think, the talk of a blockchain SIM card have been circulating around the complex community for a while. And I think it's like the early announces, I think February or March last year. So people know that we have a PR release. And
it's been around.
It's been around, like China Telecom is collaborating with us on developing a blockchain SIM card. And essentially, well, it's an access point to Web3. So basically it's a, you know, SIM card that has a hardware wallet functionality. And the exciting update is that we have that SIM card actually in the true public beta. That means there are 200, 300 physical cards that are already being issued. And those cards are actually having the functionality of blockchain wallet and also have the functionality as a phone SIM card. And then it can be used in the mainland and, you know, in the regions covered by China Telecom. Mm-hmm. And the importance about this update is that it actually, you know, it's first, it's an interesting way to provide the normal users to access, I always believe, provide normal users to access Web3. It's, you know, private key management is too hard. We all know it's too hard and
very difficult.
Well, probably half of us lost something because of we messed up that. And you can say, oh, Ledger or, you know, hardware wallet is a solution. But it's not friendly for intern, for people that you know, just get into the field, or people not familiar with the field, right? You cannot talk with your mommy or daddy. Okay, buy this ledger. What is this, right? So that's and this provides a very natural interface for them, because everyone knows what's a SIM card, right? And everyone has a cell phone, and you know, the blockchain SIM card basically uses a connection like a Bluetooth. So it's like it has a Bluetooth connection automatically. The phone will read, and then the private key stays inside the hardware, and you have only the signatures being communicated via Bluetooth and back to the phone, so that you're accessing it in a very safe way. And that's very exciting. It provides natural access point, and it has additional meanings for, I think, for mainland China, actually, because one of the reasons that China has this kind of rigid cryptocurrency crackdown is because they can't figure out money laundering, right? Mm-hmm. They can't figure out what's happening behind, and they just felt this technology is very hard to control when it combined with fungible tokens, and this is a valid concern. And the blockchain SIM card actually provide one of the potential solutions, if you think about it, because all the carriers and at least SIM card in China are actually automatically KYC. So this has become like, if this is actually the, you know, become the standard way for people to using the blockchain, well, it will actually, you know, alleviate some concerns that the government has. So that's actually another, I think, an important point and why it's exciting. China Telecom, that's why I think, well, right. China Telecom is actually a state-owned or some like a state-owned carrier, all the carriers state-owned, but why they're doing this, why, you know, that's actually, people are keep asking, so that's actually the explanation behind it. It's like, okay, well, it's actually provide a way for for government to find a compromise between, okay, advancing the technology, allow people to use the new technology, while have some ways to control it. Yeah, so that's very exciting. So we have the beta testing, and we will release this to the general. After this phase test, we'll release this, make it accessible for users that is serviced by China Telecom. That includes, I think, Macau and Hong Kong and the mainland China. There will be, I think, in the first version, there will be some differences on software level. So you know that, you know, well, in order to use this, you have to, you know, download the app on the app store, and it's likely that the mainland China, they will, because of fungible token is not yet regulated, so they may, the app in the mainland China may be just NFT wallet rather than a fully functional crypto wallet, and then the full version will be available on Hong Kong.
Is this something that you want to expand out into regions that are around mainland China as well, other parts of Asia or other continents at some point?
Yeah, we're actually talking with different, carriers to see whether we can, you know, have expansions, and it is ongoing, and we will see how that happens. There are actually enough of interest, because I think the people start to realize that like Web3 is a chain that, you know, never going to, you know, disappear, right? It's not like something, okay, well, it's like eventually will happen, and it's just a matter of time of how to find the right way. So because of so this technology still ties to the hardware of the SIM card, so it's more natural to find the regions that, you know, where the physical SIM card is still dominant, and some regions, like, well, for example, the country I'm right now, like Canada, they are, well, a lot of people are just using software SIM card, and it makes sense. And then that just disables that potential interface for putting a blocking SIG card there. So yeah, we are looking for, we are negotiating for, I think, two or three different carriers. And they are also, because there are some of the hardware technology are developed by China Telecom. So it's not like just we can, you know, finalize the collaboration. We need to bring them as well. So it's not like something that we can decide alone. So we will see. We're very excited about this. I think we will see new regions coming out.
Can you add other types of blockchain-based applications to the SIM card as well, like in the near future? Like, I know you mentioned the wallet being one of those key features, but could you add other things in so people could take advantage of the Conflux network and maybe use different applications?
So it should be able to connect to, you know, just like all the wallet apps, popular wallet app, like you know, like M token, like OKX, Web3 wallet, those. Yeah, in the end, it could be fully functioning too. It's just the hardware. Well, what's the key limiting factor is the signature scheme support for the hardware, right? So if a blockchain that is using two, I think wild kind of a signature scheme, then it is not supported yet. But so the first version will definitely be able to support Ethereum, Conflux, and block Bitcoin, maybe, I guess. That's who would be,
I know you also have a stablecoin update too. I heard about a stablecoin in Hong Kong, correct? What's that going to look like?
Oh, yeah. So we are, so we, it has been, you know, So Hong Kong has changing of their, you know, or like embracing Web3 has been announced. And then, so we are partnering with a lot of, you know, we're welcoming any stablecoin issuers. So one of the stablecoin, Hong Kong's planning is they will have regulations how to issue Hong Kong dollar stablecoin. And I think Hong Kong dollar stablecoin, if it become any team become created and become big, it will be beneficial to the community, the whole crypto community or blockchain community as a whole, because US and especially the banking system is not, you know, it's not very friendly to the crypto community. Let's just say that, right? So, well, although Hong Kong dollar is kind of pegged to US dollar, but well, if you got a, you know, like a Hong Kong dollar stablecoin, and that is, I mean, fully, you know, regulated, embraced by the jurisdiction, you basically get a safe route of bringing fiat into the system, and that will benefit all of the people. So that's I think that's a first. I think just in general, that's a very exciting thing, and so we are also working. So we basically are trying to find out who are the responsible players. And we also incubated, we co-invest, not incubate, we co-invest together with, well, it's the PR is not released. I think I should not say the name. So we are, we incubate, we co-invest, a team that will develop a new Hong Kong stablecoin. And because of the team's background, we are actually very confident that they will be able to get the license. First step is, of course, join the sandbox, get a license. And I think the PR, they have a closest round. And I think the PR will release very soon. So I will not, you know, say too much, because it's about the specific team, because there will be, you know, announcement. I won't wait for their announcement rather than, but so there will be, the overall expectation is starting from, I think March or early as end of February, but at least March, we will have a Hong Kong stablecoin start to circulate in Conflux. And I believe because of the Conflux special regulatory status, it's likely that a lot of those Hong Kong stablecoins will, once they start issue on chain, will choose Conflux at least as one of the issuing chains. So yeah, so what this means is it will create a new interesting kind of assets. And I'm always thinking one possible thing that blockchain can do is to maybe once we have different kinds of stablecoins, we can create a marketplace just mm-hmm. like trading for different currencies. We
trade like kind of like a 4X almost.
Yeah, kind of a 4X. And we may also try to need to kind of think about what's the best DeFi protocol. So how to actually do it. The existing DeFi protocol may not be the best suited for them, right? So at least needs some variant of Uniswap V3 rather than something like Curve, because they are not exactly stable between each other, right? Mm-hmm. That's a interesting observations we have.
Will you guys be working with any banks for the stablecoin as well? So for like people that may own it, may want to cash it out.
Okay. We are the public chain. We don't work for any bank, but you know, as a stablecoin issuing startup or the team definitely will work with the banks, and then they will enable the people to exchange in and out. That's the ultimate goal. And I think understanding that I think it's more important to actually find a way to satisfy the regulation and then put the coins to. I think there are three key things we need to do. So first is we want to, you know, make the stablecoin happen. People can access it. That mm-hmm. is not necessarily saying that you have to have the capability to directly go to exchange. It's like, okay, now you own USDT. Well, most people don't know if I have a way to go to the tether to change USDT back to the US dollar. But right. People accept that USDT is fine, or at least almost fine. And same for USDC. Well, USDC, you may be able to, you know, register an account at Coinbase and find some route to, you know, if you want to change yourself. But still, a lot of people, you know, just hold the USDC and they don't have ways to change back direction back to USDC. But it's accepted by us. Mm-hmm. So one key thing is you need to find a way to get to the hand of people. And the second thing is that you have to make sure that, you know, it's reliable, right? It's stable. I mean, then the third is, okay, you want it for long-term sustainability. You want to have regulators be okay with it and being regulatory compliant on the long end. So I think it's more just to find a solution that satisfies those three. About allowing anyone to go to bank to exchange, that might be the ultimate goal. Because mm-hmm. here's why: because you banking sector still have this pressure of, you know, just okay, suddenly just like exchange or, you know, why exchange your stablecoin issuers always have issues. Bank is just you know, bank have this KYC pressure, right? Okay, well suddenly, well I need to. There are like all people can exchange. That means the bank need managing, you know, too much, a lot of people's KYC. So a lot of those stablecoin issue, or I think the practical scheme for issuing stablecoin is you have those dealers or market makers that actually, you know, have the KYCs. They have the route to directly exchange the monies with the bank. So, you know, banks are dealing with a limited amount of a KYC, and then they felt less exposed. Okay, mm-hmm. And then it's those you know, dealers or market makers then further disseminated via some market, via, you know, their own route, and this multi-level dissemination will be more, I would say, more practical for stablecoin for now still.
Okay, cool. It sounds like you got a pretty good structure laid out for this to start rolling out. And you said March, right?
Yeah. I think March we will be starting to see stable coins, Hong Kong dollar stable coins on Conflux. That's I'm confident about it.
Okay, cool. Right on. Before we wrap up the episode and bring it to a conclusion, what else are you excited about within the Conflux network here in 2024? We talked about the blockchain SIM card. We talked about the stablecoin.
March. So there's actually one additional technical upgrade that we are planning, and I think we're also very excited about. That is, I already introduced the Conflux have this subspace structure.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, they have it's the same chain, but they have two separate logical chain or some way that they are, but they can, you know, allow the asset flow back forth. So because we have the infrastructure setting there, it is actually very easy to support additional subspace. And we do hear, so this is what we just want to help the community. We hear there is a lot of, demand for Bitcoin infrastructures recently, mm-hmm. Because of all these, the heart of all these and, the recent possibilities of doing additional stuff in
the
Bitcoin.
Ordinals.
Yeah. So that's, so a lot of people actually, goes into that. And after, playing the speculation, then realize there's nothing much additional thing they can do because Bitcoin is itself is, well, first, it's just like Ethereum, it's very expensive, right? So that's the first thing. And second is Bitcoin script language is indeed very limited to what you can do or cannot mm-hmm. do. It's basically, it's not just not Turing complete, it's cannot do anything that is sophisticated, right?
It's not meant to be.
Yeah. So we plan to say, okay, well, what if, since there is a need, and it's also something that our structure could do maybe 1 month development, because it's just, okay, start a new subspace. We have most of the infrastructure there. So we are in the next upgrade. We are going to create a new subspace that is designed for as a Bitcoin L2. And then we will try to enable. So the two things we want to. So first is we want to have the as secure as possible connections to the Bitcoin main layer. So being as secure is like allowed by Bitcoin scripting mm-hmm. language. So there are certain things. Okay, so there are a lot of the projects going on, putting buzzword together, but I, as computer scientist, I don't understand, right? So it's like, they say, okay, we're going to doing ZK layer 2 for Bitcoin. But wait a minute, well, Bitcoin script language is so limited, and how are you going to do verifications on Bitcoin script language? So this is, well, so we're not doing that. So we're going to use a reshare based private key construction scheme. So to make sure that, okay, as long as the Bitcoin network, so first we're going to use Bitcoin, bring the Bitcoin staking functionality to Conflux. This is basically trying to use Bitcoin, existing Bitcoin powers, and to Bitcoin network power security to enhance Conflux security. So that's the first thing. Then we are bring those together. So we're going to require all the Conflux POS node to run a Bitcoin Lite node. And then we are going to say that, okay, as long as the Bitcoin does not fail and the enhanced Conflux capability of enhanced Conflux POS, which also combine some of Bitcoin security, those two do not fail, then the asset flow will not fail, the security, the limits will not fail. So we have an asset way to bridge the assets or tunnel the assets between the layer two that we're building and the Bitcoin in an as secure as possible way. So that's the first thing. Then we will enable that will enable us to create a new subspace that is using Bitcoin as a gas, and then we'll be able to do, you know, all the EVM development and bring the existing two chains to enable those new assets like Bitcoin, all these, all those. So that's something we are actively working on, and it will be available in the next upgrade of the Conflux network, which I expect will happen on Q2 this year.
That's very fascinating. You guys got a lot of stuff going on. How do you manage all this?
Well, we're just working hard.
Good answer. Where can people go to learn more about the Conflux Network, to maybe join some of the communities, maybe get involved themselves, maybe they want to develop something? Where would you direct people?
Oh, well, just go to the Conflux website, and then we have Telegram groups. We have we also have the, you know, all the Discord servers, and you know, there are, you know, the community is very active there. And so and also in our website you can find all the technical documents, and if you want to, you know, just develop on top of Conflux and you see those new developments there, new update, if there are any opportunity you want to catch on, yeah, then just you know, go check that out. And you can also find the contact information to the team, and then we're happy to chat with you.
Fan, thank you for taking the time to come on the episode today. Come on the podcast and do an episode. It's been really, really fun learning about the Conflux Network and some of the big updates you guys have. So again, really appreciate the time, and we'll have to do this again soon in the future when some of these launch.
Wow, great. Happy to chat with you. Thank you.